All right. Our agenda was an RSC. Let's do a quick introduction. Alexandra, are you there?
Yep.
You mind letting everyone know who you are and why you're here?
Yeah, sure. So I'm Alexandre Passant. I'm a researcher in Derry. I'm also running a startup called Sival doing music recommendation and discovery. And so we started to use JSON-LD to represent the data in Sival. So that's the main reason I'm there. So I'm representing Sival and not Derry there.
Awesome. And Marcus, are you there?
Integration of them with semantic graphic data, that kind of thing. And yeah, one approach, which is called Serrated J, where I try to do the things that with JSON-LD, so that's why I'm here.
Okay, it's very, very difficult to make out your audio, Marcus. Okay, no problem. Okay. Let's see. Do we have anyone else? That's new. I don't think so. All right. So we had two additions to the agenda today. One of them was whether or not we should talk about basic language in the spec or put that into another document. And the other addition is slipping my mind. Help me out, Greg.
Test suite.
Yes, discussing what we should do for the test suite. Does anybody have any thoughts on which one they'd like to see us discuss first? So do people have a strong opinion on something that we should absolutely talk about today that should go to the front of the agenda? All right, so let's go ahead and do, in that case, let's go ahead and do implementations, test suite, basic spec language, and then the rest of the agenda, the requirements spec update, algorithm spec language updates, and the IANA MIME type registration. All right, so first up, updates on implementations. There is a link. Let me grab the link here. So we have a list of implementations that's growing, which is really nice to see this early in the process. Granted, Dave Longley has done the vast majority of these implementations. The C++, JavaScript, PHP implementations are his. Mike Johnson has done a Python implementation, as has Brad Allen. And then Greg is doing a very complete Ruby implementation, and we have a new Erlang implementation called URDF that's coming out there. So all of those, it's nice to see that many people working on implementations. Any other implementations that we should know about? Alexander, are you guys using your own implementation, or are you using one of the ones that we just listed?
We don't have any clients so far. We just use simple JSON. We read that as JSON so far, but as JSON-LD.
Okay. All right, well, if that's it for implementations, we can move on. Let's see. So the test suite is next. We do have a list of tests along with the Forge implementation for DigitalBazaar's Forge implementation. So get a link to the test that we use. So this is on GitHub. Anyone can view it. But basically, they're compaction, expansion, framing, and normalization tests. And the way that we've done the test suite so far is that the input that you take is a valid JSON-LD document. It can be in any format. And then we use the algorithms to normalize the input JSON-LD. When it's normalized, then you can do a straight string comparison on the output. So the normalized output is what we're using to test whether or not your implementation is valid. There are some other ways, other things that we need to test, such as, you know, if you convert the JSON to RDF. I think Greg has a number of Sparkle-based tests that allow you to kind of query the graph using Sparkle, the graph that's generated from the JSON-LD document using Sparkle. But how we do this is still kind of up in the air. The way that we did it for the RDFA processors is we created a website, just kind of a web service that's a test suite, and the test suite had a number of input documents that it would take in, and then it would do a web service call to an RDFA processor out there on the web. So basically people expose their processors as web services. The test suite would make a call out, and it was kind of a pluggable test suite, so your test suite would make a call out to the web service, somebody else's, you know, processor web service, get the result, and then do either a Sparkle query or a string comparison to see whether or not the test was successful. And we have that entire test suite, that system is, you know, open source. I mean, I did the initial implementation for it, and I think we can modify it pretty easily to work with the JSON-LD test suite. So we can have an online version like that, or we can continue with an offline version. The problem with the offline version is that every implementer has to write their own kind of test harness, and that can be it can be annoying to do. And the RDFA, that this RDFA test suite actually worked out pretty well for us. People just kind of exposed their web services, and they knew what the input and output was supposed to be, and they just tested it using that. Are there any other thoughts on what we should do for a test suite?
So this is Greg. So I actually did port through. It's not running, but the test suite infrastructure on jsonld.org is based upon the crazy Yvonne thing that that Ivan had done for RDFA, including a manifest in jsonld form with the ability to specify different types of tests, the ones being there now, RDF Sparkle tests. But that presumably would allow us to integrate tests from your Forge or anything else. Personally, I'd rather see us go towards string comparisons rather than Sparkle, but I think having a online facility for doing that is pretty useful.
Okay. So I guess your general take on that is that you'd like us to kind of simplify it and not necessarily require Sparkle unless absolutely necessary. So I guess what that means is that implementers would be required to implement the normalization algorithm, which is the most complex part of the JSON-LD specification.
It's also possible that similar to the way that you would take the results and run them through Sparkle to get results, that you might take interim results, run them through a known normalization system to get string output for comparison. That wouldn't test, obviously, the normalization bits, but it would be a way of dealing with implementations that don't output normalized output.
Right, right. And Dave has said in IRC that he would definitely like to see string comparisons for non-RDF. So if you're handling the RDF test, then perhaps Sparkle might be okay, but if we can avoid it, that would be good. That's what Dave's saying. in IRC. And I agree. I don't think that – I think the issue that we had with the RDFA test suite is that it's fairly – I mean, the test suite's more complicated than it probably needs to be. Really, that was the only way we could think of testing it, but at least the RDFA test suite, the only way that we could think of doing it is just writing Sparkle queries. But with JSON-LD, we can do just very straight string comparisons because any JSON-LD processor that implements the normalization algorithm should generate the exact same output string. The other thing that we were thinking of doing was having a processor. Let's say the thing's exposed as a web service. We would be able to express four different. We would basically have four different types of calls. So one of them would be compaction, expansion. The other one, expansion. The third one, framing, and the fourth one, normalization. So that we could make a call to the web service and tell it the type of transformation we would want the JSON-LD processor to make on the input. And that's helpful if you're trying to just implement each one of these steps, each one of these algorithms on its own. So, for example, the normalization algorithm is dependent on the expansion algorithm. And so you don't know if your normalization algorithm is broken because the normalization algorithm is broken or the expansion portion of the normalization algorithm is broken. So having these web services or defining that these web services have to have, you know, different modes of operation might be a good thing. And those modes of operation really have to do also with what the API needs to do, right? So that in the latest version of the spec, we took out the API. We're going to put it back in once we have the algorithm spec'd out. But really, a JSON-LD processor has four basic functions that you can call on it, right? And so that's compact, expand, frame, and normalize. And those are the API calls that we're going to spec out in the API. And we might as well have the web services expose those four calls as well. One, because it'll help with testing, and two, because that's effectively what the JavaScript API is going to allow people to do as well. Any thoughts on that about basically speccing out what a web service, a JSON-LD web service, should expose, basically the four basic functions for the JSON-LD API? Mark, it's very, very difficult again to hear your audio. Could you type it out in IRC?
Yeah, sorry.
So Dave in IRC says, sounds good, but keep in mind that we might have other methods in the JSON-LD API, including something that takes in triples and something that exports triples. That's true. I don't know if we've really talked about that at all, or at least that's kind of new to me. So, yeah. I mean, we have to start somewhere, so maybe exposing these four mechanisms, these four calls, API calls in the web service would be a good place to start. Marcus in IRC says, I think it would be a good idea to create a web service to be able to test the different parts independently. Dave Longley said plus one to the four methods being a good start. And then Greg says exporting triples are useful if VNode IDs are normalized. Okay, well, I mean, it sounds like there's at least nobody's opposed to taking the approach of I think this is what we seem to have consensus on. We'll just use regular string comparisons to start off with for what the output should be. to see whether or not a test fails or succeeds, we will have four different mechanisms of output. One of them is going to be compaction, then other one's going to be expansion, the third one's going to be framing, and the fourth one's going to be normalization. And those will be the output of those web service calls should be the output of the API calls. So they'll mirror, the API calls will be mirrored in the web service. And there are still issues with, like for example, compaction and expansion, those mechanisms don't require you to have a certain order in the output. So we can't use, I don't think we can use string comparison to see whether or not you succeed or fail on those tests. We'd need to talk about how we're going to spec that out. But the normalization stuff does need a very specific order. So we may only be able to do the straight string comparison on the normalization tests. Dave Longley in IRC is saying if we define an order like lexicographically sorted keys for the outputs, that might work. I agree. We also would have to talk about spacing. You know, we would have to, you know, basically remove all white space. We would have to have lexicographically sorted keys. So yeah, this is an issue. It either requires us to write more spec language on exactly what the output from a web service should be. Such as lexicographically sorted keys, no white space. In fact, that's probably the only way we can make the compact, expand, and framing mechanisms work. Yeah, as far as the web service and as far as the test suite's concerned. Does anyone have any further thoughts on that? Does that seem like too? Does that seem like an annoying requirement? Does anyone think that we need to spec this out in the actual spec, or we should just talk about what the test suite expects? Like, is there any benefit to having a web service, a JSON-LD web service defined in the specification that says if you're going to implement a JSON-LD web service, then all output has to be lexicographically sorted and it needs to be there needs to be no white space. So Marcus says... Marcus says that he thinks it should be in a test specification. The expression of, I guess, the JSON-LD, the web service output should be in a test specification. And Dave Longley and Greg plus one that. So not just it's not just a test document, but it's not included in the actual specification. I tend to agree with that. Okay. So consensus on that then is we will have a separate document that tells you how you should interact with the test suite. It's probably just going to be on the test suite page. And the test suite, the test harness assumes that you lexicographically sort your keys and you remove all white space. And if we do that, then we can test compaction, expansion, normalization, and framing without any issues. All right. Any concerns about the test suite before we move on? Is there anything else we need to discuss about the test suite? All right. Moving on. Let's see. Okay, so next up was basic spec language. Basically, this is the, I guess this is really a beginner's guide, basic slash beginner's guide to JSON LD. So the about 3 or 4 weeks ago, Brian Peterson and a couple of other folks, Glenn and Kingsley, had issues with the way that we were writing the JSON LD specification. Specifically, Kingsley was concerned that we were conflating, you know, linked data with non-linked data, and we were misusing the terms. Glenn had a number of issues with the complexity of the specification and the direction of the specification, and Brian Peterson had issues with the focus of the specification, specifically that we were, it was too complicated and that we needed a very simple introduction to JSON LD. And so that resulted in a specification called the basic specification. And unfortunately, when I wrote that specification, I conflated Brian, Glenn, and Kingsley's issues in thinking that they were talking about the same thing when they were really talking about three separate issues. And so the basic specification kind of started off as this misguided attempt to try and simplify the larger JSON LD specification. I think where we might want to go on this is by writing an introductory document, just a, you know, a very quick JSON LD for begin, and that would basically only talk about the features that Brian sent to the mailing list. Let me try and find his email. So here's the email. And so he says that there are four key things that Brian wants to see in kind of a basic introduction. And these are those four things. All JSON objects are interpreted as resources, subjects and objects. Subject is the IRI for that resource, or anonymous subject if there's no subject specifier. Properties are tokens instead of queries, or IRIs, so he doesn't want to see IRIs or query usage in the basic usage for JSON LD, just tokens and just basically key value pairs. And then JSON arrays are used for multiple values for a property. And I think that we can, I mean, you know, the spec was designed to, or at least JSON LD is meant to provide that kind of easy introduction into the linked data world. And I think that Brian's approach is, it's a good one, right? Because we want to make this as simple as possible for people to start using, and then you can expand into the more complicated use cases like, you know, framing and normalization. Are there any opinions on what direction we should go with this I guess tutorial or introduction or specification? Greg, do you have any thoughts on what you'd like to see?
Well, I think that's generally a good idea, and I think we could. I don't know if we actually need a separate document to start with. We might just start by putting the stuff in an introduction, and then rewrite the various material along those lines until we get to the advanced concepts, and maybe a lot of the things that we have in there now should be moved to advanced concepts. I think Kingsley had also echoed some of those thoughts.
Okay.
For instance, type literals came to mind. Certainly unnamed nodes.
So moving unnamed nodes to the advanced section. So Marcus said that he really liked Symphony's approach of giving a tutorial with a small part taught every day. And yeah, I definitely like that bit, maybe having a small set of tutorials. The issue with the, you know, putting this stuff in the specification, I think it's a good idea to make the specification so that you introduce concepts slowly. So you start off with the most basic way, and then you kind of add, you layer on concepts once the basics are laid down. And I tried to rewrite the specification. The latest rewrite of the specification attempts to do that. So perhaps we'll whittle that stuff down. The problem is when you, I think there's a line you cross such that you start writing tutorials. When you start writing tutorials in the specification, I think you kind of conflate the audience. Which audience you're directing the specification towards, right? Because there are the people that are going to use this to write applications, and then there are the people that are writing implementations and processors. And I don't think that web developers should be reading the implementation specification. So that's basically the thing that we're writing. I think a set of tutorials like what Marcus has talked about, the Symfony's approach of just giving a small tutorial, you know, adding a feature every day would be a better approach. Dave Longley said that starting with the basics in the spec and then getting advanced works for me. So yeah, I think we need to be careful about giving too many tutorials in the specification. So to give some background on that, we did that in the RDFA specification, and people complain a lot that it's the RDFA specification is too verbose, that it tries to teach too much. There's also an RDFA primer document where we give a small introduction to it. But if you think of the things like the HTML5 specification, that specification doesn't try, or you know, just the HTML specification, or the OAuth specification, or any of those specs, they don't try and give a tutorial on how you express, you know, how you do markup or write a basic application with it. They talk about how to implement a processor, or how to implement a web browser, a user agent. But they don't tell you kind of this is how you would use it in day-to-day usage, if that makes sense. Any other thoughts on this? So Marcus says, I agree, the spec should remain a spec. Tutorial should be a different thing. We shouldn't conflate them. So I guess, you know, we'll keep this in mind as we go. Both Greg and I go back through the specification, and we can move things from the basic section to the advanced section. But they're, you know, they're still going to be in the same document. And I don't know, Greg. Do you think that we could? Alexander says that we could have a one-page cheat sheet. Does anyone else have a strong feeling one way or the other? It seems like people are saying that we should certainly work to simplify what basic concepts and advanced concepts are in the specification and move some pros around to make sure that the basic stuff flows into the advanced stuff fairly easily. But when it comes to tutorials and how people should use the specification, that should be external to the spec, perhaps in a set of tutorials, short tutorials that people can read about and just kind of go from, you know, basically maybe there's a six-part series of small articles that are one, you know, a page long, and people can read those articles and learn something new about JSON-LD, starting at the basics and then going to the advanced concepts.
Markers. I think they also suggested a wiki.
Yeah.
And that might be a place to put those examples.
Yeah. I'm a bit hesitant to set up a wiki because we did that for the RDFA stuff and just people didn't contribute. I mean, people have access, you know, people have access to GitHub. They can write, you know, they can write HTML and tutorials. You know, there are all types of tools that people can use out there already to do, you know, wiki editing.
I'm really hesitant to push everything into GitHub. But WikiWork, speaking personally as a non-coder.
Right.
That's Ted speaking, not Manu. As a non-coder, I don't use GitHub, and I'm starting to have to learn it, and it's a pain. It is painful to use. For stuff like this, a wiki makes really good sense, and the fact that nobody contributes either means that interest is not there or publicity sucks. It doesn't mean that the wiki is the wrong tool for the job.
Mm. So the other issue, and then I have a feeling that we're going to end up creating a wiki. The other issue that I have with the wiki is that now all of our history is tracked, and if we do the wiki, then all of a sudden we have something that's stuck around in a database somewhere, meaning that it's difficult for people to run the entire site or move the entire site. The entire site of the history isn't tracked. All of a sudden, you've got a database. But I think we might be able to set up MediaWiki to run off a local SQLite database. We've done that before. It's just it's a time commitment to the people running the site to set up the wiki. And what we've found is that we end up setting up the wiki and nobody contributes to the vast majority of these projects. But I think, Ted, you make an absolutely solid point, which is, you know, non-coders don't want to push everything into GitHub. But I don't understand why we can't just use, you know, some. I mean, there are tons of other tools out there that allow people to write and publish content. Why do we need to set one up just so that we can write these articles, right? Why can't someone write a Word document or a Google document? And then one of us takes that and puts it into the website.
Well, there are issues of gatekeeper, potentially. If it's collaborative editing, then there are places that there are ways to do that. Wiki is a good one that tracks history. CVS is a similar sort of thing. GitHub is an AVS, and yeah, the history is tracked. Migrating it, if your concern is moving from here to there, history can get lost no matter what tool you're using. If you go to Word docs, everybody has to know to track changes, and there's some degree of version compatibility that you have to worry about. And it's not really collaborative editing.
Mm-hmm.
Google Docs, more collaborative editing, but absolutely no history track.
Mm-hmm.
Wiki is the right tool for this job.
All right. So I guess then what that means is one of us is just going to end up implementing a wiki. We'll probably end up using it. We'll just put a wiki up that everyone can edit. The other issue is fighting spam and all this other management headache that comes along with it.
And this is one of the reasons that people do stuff within W3C space, because an awful lot of the admin headaches are covered by being there.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that the person that ends up administrating it are the people that are running the project, and so it's effectively, it turns into the editor's job, right? So we end up having to deal with a whole bunch of spam. We won't know until we set up the wiki how many people contribute. So I guess I'm complaining about it because I feel that it's going to fall onto my head to have to set up and manage all this stuff. That's why I'm complaining. So we will set the wiki up and hopefully people will contribute. But I don't have a very I don't think that's what's going to happen. So does that sound good? We're going to set up a wiki and see if people contribute to the articles and that kind of stuff.
It seems the way forward.
All right. We'll go ahead and set up a wiki. catching up on the RSV backlog of what people have said. Marcus is saying, are we talking about a wiki for the long term or just while writing the tutorials? I think we're talking about a wiki for the long term. There's no reason to go to the trouble of setting up a wiki and then just for writing tutorials. If it was just for writing tutorials, we could just do it in email or in a doc, a Word document. Okay. Anything then Marcus says, then I kind of share your objections, Manu. If setting up a wiki will get more people to contribute to the project, I think that's a positive thing, regardless of the amount of administrative headache. Marcus is saying that he doesn't think that anyone will contribute after the initial phase of writing the tutorials. We'll just set it up and see. I mean, you know, the worst that could happen is that it was a waste of time. And we can take the wiki down if people aren't using it. So Marcus is also agreeing. Let's go ahead and try that. All right. What is next up on the agenda? Any other input on the wiki? Or I guess this is really the basic specification and tutorials. All right. So I think the next up are the requirements spec update, I believe. Hopefully I'm not missing something that we added to the agenda. Greg, I'll scribe for you as you go through this.
Okay, did you want me to go through the requirements doc, Manu?
Yeah, please.
Okay, yeah. So, let's see. I probably can't really comment too much on the things that you and Dave added, other than I think we went through, excuse me, and changed the terms to remove RDF pretty much throughout the document, except for specific RDF sections, and then reorganized the or rewrote a lot of the examples and text using the update to the keywords we agreed upon, for instance, at subject in place of just at type in place of a. And a lot of text was output or was removed to specific algorithm sections. So in there, I think in some form of in-progress work is expansion, compaction, framing, and normalization algorithms, as well as the RDF conversion. In experimental concepts, we have a discussion of disjoint graphs, which basically is an array structure containing a set of or a list of objects in associative array form. And then a discussion of support for RDF lists and how that would modify the particular algorithms. The one that I filled in was updates to the RDF conversion algorithm to do that. And that's basically based upon the way that updates or lists are done in Turtle. Was there more in the spec that you wanted to discuss, Manu?
I thought we were going to talk about the requirements document. You're talking about the spec.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But that's fine. But that's fine because we might, you know, it's good. That was a good overview of the changes. We'll just swap those around in the agenda. So the other things that we added to the spec was we've basically been going through and adding all of the algorithms that are in the current set of JSON-LD processor implementations. So we added algorithms for compaction, expansion, framing, and we think that those are they're unstable now versus completely experimental. So this means that we need to make two or three more passes through them to make sure that they describe what's happening in the code, and then we will ask people to kind of implement them and see if they can implement it based on the pros and the spec. The one that we're currently working on is a normalization algorithm, and that's the most complicated one out of all of them, or it's the most involved. It's not complicated. It just there are lots of steps, lots of simple steps that you kind of put together to end up normalizing a JSON-LD document. So the other change that I think Greg touched on is we went through the entire JSON-LD specification and tried to make it flow a bit better. So we put all of the basic concepts up front and we try and give a very gentle introduction in the beginning, and we build more and more concepts up as you read further down in the document. So the very beginning of the document is just kind of the basics. Then you start getting into medium, moderate to advanced concepts, and then there's an advanced section. And then as you read about halfway through the spec, you get into the algorithm. So this is exactly what JSON-LD processor implementers have to do to implement the compaction, expansion, framing, and normalization parts of the specification. And then they have basically algorithms that people could follow if they wanted to implement each algorithm. And then we've moved some of the other concepts in the spec down to the very bottom, like how do you mark up microdata with JSON-LD, or how do you express something that was microdata with JSON-LD, how do you express something that was RDFA with JSON-LD, how do you express microformats. All that stuff was moved to an appendix at the very end of the document because it didn't seem really central to the specification. We temporarily removed the API section because it was just wrong. We had changed so much in the specification that the API section was completely off. We do intend to add it back in there after we get the normalization algorithm complete, spec'd out completely. I think the development over the next couple of weeks is going to be we're going to finish specing out the normalization algorithm. And then once we spec that out, we're going to add the API stuff back in there, and the API is going to have, I think, four calls, basically, compact, expand, frame, and normalize. And then we will, and then we may put something in there about web services, how web services should expose those API calls, but not going as far to say that they have to be, the keys have to be sorted lexicographically, and white space has to be removed. And I think that's going to be the first cut of the spec. The W3C calls it a first public working draft. It's somewhere between a first public working draft and a last call document, saying that we think that we have most of the concepts that we wanted to have in the specification in there, and we want people to kind of implementation to see if it's implementable. Are there any questions? I realize that was a very long list of changes. Are there any features that people feel are not in the document right now, or any concepts that we haven't talked about on the mailing list or are not being tracked in some way that should be in the specification? Okay. as Yvonne would say, stunned silence. So maybe that was a bit too much, an overload of of what we've changed. So the basic takeaway is the document has changed a great deal based on input from the mailing list. We have tried to make the flow of the document better. So we start out with basic concepts, move to advanced concepts, and then implementation details at the very bottom of the document. We are trying to finish off the specing of the algorithms. And once that's done, we'll spec out the API, and then we think that we're going to be done as far as design goes with the specification. All right.
Amano, I think we're going to need to solicit for specific feedback on the spec when we're ready from the mailing list, since I think a number of the people that are more vocal about things are not on the call necessarily, but do interact on the mailing list.
Yes, absolutely. Yep, totally agree. Yeah, and I mean we're not necessarily operating under W3C protocol here. This is just kind of a bunch of people getting together and designing something that the W3C may pick up in the future. But that, you know, so it means that, you know, we don't ever resolve anything on the calls. There's no final binding agreement on anything. Everything's kind of it will continue to be discussed. There's at no point at which we say, okay, that's it. Nobody else can say anything about the spec, and we're just moving it forward. So the feedback that we're taking in is from this telecon, from the mailing list, you know, from Twitter, from Google+, any place that we hear about the specification, we try and address the issues that people are having. So yes, I agree. We should certainly solicit more feedback from the mailing list. All right. So
do you want to? Should I go through the requirements, because I sort of blew that one?
No. That's fine. Here's the. That's what I was getting ready to move on to. Any other bits on the specification, the JSON-LD spec, and the changes that we've made before we move on? All right, Greg, take it away.
Okay, it basically just moved this forward again based upon comments from the list, changed the definition of linked data to Tim Berners-Lee quote with a removal of some language in there that really biased towards RDF and Sparkle, as apparently the original text note was defined. I believe we have completed everything in the linked data requirements. Don't think we need to go over that some more. I did add a little bit about structured data, since at the time we were looking to make a distinction between linked data and structured data. My sense is that meme has sort of run its course, and this might not be necessary. Then within JSON-LD, I expanded on what then the requirements that would lead to the specification would be based upon these tenets. So I will just run through each of those, and please chime in if you want to discuss them. A JSON-LD document must be able to express a linked data graph. JSON-LD uses JSON objects, arrays, numbers, strings, and other literal names to express semantic information. Subject is defined using a designated name value pair of a JSON object, so the at subject, for instance. There must be a way to label JSON object with an IRA, and there may be a way to reference an unlabeled JSON object that does not have a direct child relationship.
I don't understand that one, Greg.
Basically, that indicates that there, the need for having vnode names, named vnodes, so that you could have two things that were objects.
Okay.
An object did not have an IRI subject that was referenced from two different objects that they did have an IRI subject.
Right. Greg, would you mind slowing down a bit on this stuff? Because even I'm having a hard time thinking about each one of these. meaning that, you know, we've been living and breathing this stuff and I'm having a hard time keeping up. So I'm going back to the number one. JSON-LD document must be able to express a linked data graph. Did anyone have issues with this on the call? Thing. Jason, go ahead.
That seems like the self-evident one. I mean.
Right. Yeah. A JSON LD document uses JSON objects, arrays, numbers, strings, and other literal names to express semantic information. That's basically saying that a JSON LD document is JSON.
One problem with this and a couple of the others is they are not exactly normative language. There's no must, should, or shall in there.
Do we say that a JSON LD document must be valid JSON anywhere?
That would be a good one.
Yeah. We should probably say that because I think that that's effectively what number two is saying, right?
Yeah.
So should we change a JSON LD document uses? Should we change that to a JSON LD document must be a valid JSON document?
They say slightly different things. One
I
says
think
that
this inserts number two. This is an insert line, not a replacement line.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so in addition, we would say a JSON LD doc must be a valid JSON document, and we would keep number two. And I don't think it really needs to have anything normative in there, right? It's just kind of an informational thing. So I think not having normative language in number two is fine.
So the reason there was a question, why not just replace two with this language, because if saying that it is a valid JSON document doesn't necessarily say anything about using the JSON elements in order to express that. What two says now is that all of those elements are used to express the semantic content of the document.
Right. Yeah, and I agree with that.
And I'm happy to consider any rewording that gets that effect. But if an array exists, then it has some result on the processing, rather
right.
than it may exist, the processor will accept it, but not necessarily do anything with it.
Yeah. And there's this issue that you have later down in the document that says, what does null map to? And we don't have a very good answer for that yet. It's not we don't specify what that is in the specification or any of that stuff. So what
right.
I'm saying is that number two is, you know, we use objects, arrays, numbers, and strings, and the issue is and other literal names. True and false have mappings, but null does not currently.
We could define a mapping for null. For instance,
we could, but we don't know if we. Yeah.
We could also say it's undefined.
We could say
yep.
that too.
Yep.
That hand wave has been used in an awful lot of specs, and it has value.
Right.
Yeah.
I agree. So I guess we could keep in other literal names and just do the null is undefined. We may want to say must not be used. We use null in the framing algorithm to specify that an output didn't have a mapping. We can get into that later, but I think number two is fine as is. Marcus, you said in IRC, why not replace number two? It doesn't fit the rest of the list. What is the advantage of having the number two item? I don't really get what you're trying to say with that. Did the discussion, did that help you in any way? Did that help explain the concern? of why we can't get rid of it. We're really saying two different things. Marcus is saying not really. So one of them is a syntax. One of them is syntax, and the other one semantics. So the JSON-LD document must be a valid JSON document. Tells you what the valid syntax is, right? Meaning that anything that's valid in JSON-LD document must be valid in JSON document. The number two thing that we have right there now is a JSON-LD document uses JSON objects, so it's talking about the semantics of the JSON syntax that's used. So objects, arrays, numbers, strings, and other literal names to express semantic information. So it's talking about the meaning of the things that are used in the JSON object.
I guess the other way to say that is if you have a property whose takes on a value, any JSON construct used at that value will result in some semantic meaning. For instance, if the value is an array, it denotes a multi-valued property. If it is a associative array, it denotes an object. If it's a string, it can denote a couple of things based upon coerce. So I think that's what we're saying, is not that it can exist syntactically, but that semantically, when it is used, it has meaning which enhances the meaning of the graph that's being expressed.
Right. Okay. Marcus is saying in IRC that it doesn't really explain it. If you're saying it has to be valid JSON, then it implies that you're using JSON constructs. So are you trying to say you can't use bools? Booleans. No, you can use Booleans in JSON-LD.
I'm saying that because we say specifically that using a Boolean has a semantic meaning. So using a Boolean value does have a meaning in there. The one thing that we don't have a defined meaning for so far is null.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we are at the top of the hour, and we're out of time for this telecon. Greg, would you mind kind of pushing this onto the mailing list and kind of putting the list and seeing in general how people respond to it? I have a feeling that it will generate a lot of discussion because people are going to have issues with certain bits and pieces of this.
So I did send out a reference to the requirements doc to the list.
Yeah.
It did get some amount of input, but it mostly was surrounding the linked data definition.
Yeah. Do you want me to just take the
copy of the list of the JSON and yep. send that as a mail? Okay.
Yeah. I think people tend to respond when they have text in front of them that they have to respond to. People tend to not follow links unless they're really, really, really interested, but if there's text there, they will spend 2 hours responding to the 15 bullet items that you have there.
Okay.
So, great. Thanks, Greg. All right, that's the call for the next 2 weeks. Anything else we should be aware of, anything we should keep in mind over the next 2 weeks? Any announcements that may happen? All right. That's the call. Thanks, everyone. Have a great week and a great weekend.